Do you know when I finally decided to get assessed for ADHD? The day I almost burned my house down. Let me break that down for you. It was 2021 and the pandemic lockdowns were still a thing. At the time, I lived in Santiago, Chile, with my husband and our son, who was still a baby. The only thing we could do outside the house was walk around the neighborhood. So we did. We took the stroller, the masks, and the anxiety still meant to be outside, and went for a walk. But the moment we got back and opened the door, I knew. More precisely, I remembered. I had left the stove on, making bone broth for like 4 hours or so. I freaked out internally, as I always do, and faked calmness, which I'm great at. I asked my partner to take our son to his room and play there, and I ran to the stove and turned it off. Of course, the water had evaporated entirely, who knows how long ago, and the bones were parched. But nothing else had happened. No smoke, no flames, no reduced amount of oxygen in the air that made me feel dizzy. But still, I panicked, opened the windows, and blamed myself. I blamed myself for being forgetful. I blamed myself for trying to cook something without a timer. And mostly, I blamed myself for, in my mind, putting my son's life at risk. That's the moment I knew. Standing alone in my kitchen, holding a scorching pot full of chicken bones and freezing with the cold coming in from every single window in my dining room open, I had to get assessed for ADHD and take control of it. I'm sure potentially setting your house on fire is not what you think about when you think about ADHD. If you've seen any content on social media related to it, it was probably about forgetting stuff, being late, or being clumsy. And I guess that would be accurate. Because yes, I do sometimes forget my reheated coffee cup in the microwave if I don't take it out right away. And I do struggle to be punctual because of time blindness. So it takes me extra planning and extra time just to be on time. And apparently, I have a tendency to drop things above average, which might explain why as a child I loved track and field. But being on my school's basketball team made me anxious. Like, why would these other four girls trust me with the ball, right? So, yes, I can attest to those ADHD traits. They exist, they are common manifestations, and they are easier to perceive from the outside. But on social media, they are mostly just comic relief, not a challenge on sight. And that's regarding adults with ADHD. Please do me a favor and think about a child with ADHD. I'll give you a couple of seconds. So, what did you think of? Probably a hyperactive boy, unable to sit still during class and running all over the playground at recess. But how often do you think about ADHD and picture a girl doodling in her notebook while taking notes? Did you think of a girl talking too much in class, rocking her chair back and forth? Have you come across a little girl with a happy-go-lucky disposition and thought that her high energy could be her way of manifesting hyperactivity? Because all of those traits are related to ADHD. Female ADHD. The problem is, girls and women don't usually know this and live their lives without truly understanding how their brains work or why they process things differently. Girls and women like me, Andrea. I got diagnosed at 34 years old, after I thought I almost burned my house down, remember? And when I was a little girl, I doodled on the margins of every other page in my notebooks. I would talk too much in class and be constantly called out for rocking on my chair back and forth. At home, I wrote stories, designed clubhouses, and pretended to be part of a gymnastics team so I could jump on my bed all day long. Makes sense, right? My energy and imagination knew no limits. And turns out many of those things that made me were related to having ADHD. So, yes. ADHD is forgetting things, running to be on time, and tripping and dropping things more often. But you know what ADHD also is? It's seeing the disappointment in your loved ones' faces when you fail them. It's knowing that you have great ideas, while also knowing that most of them won't make it out of your brain because that's the hard part. It's pretending that everything's fine, despite always feeling behind. It's seeing yourself being a lesser version of what you know you could be if you didn't struggle with ADHD. Because that's what it is, plenty of times. Struggle. At least for me. But that's not all of it, because having ADHD is irritating and fascinating. It makes tedious tasks painfully dull and creative projects even more exciting. It paralyzes me and makes my brain burst with unique ideas, depending on the day. So yes, sometimes it can be a lot. Hopefully, my story helps you figure it out along with me. Let me first explain what ADHD technically means. But don't worry, I promise it won't be long or boring, so no need to skip this part. Oh, and by the way, I'm not a health professional. I'm a journalist. But this entire podcast was reviewed by two experts who made sure the medical information presented here is correct and aligned with current clinical understanding. So a big thank you to Dr. Claire Sierra, a senior neuropsychologist in BC who has focused her practice on assessing and treating adult ADHD for the past 7 years. And Dr. Hilary Duncan, the director of the Cognition Clinic in Montreal, who supervises clinical psychology students in the assessment of adult ADHD and autism. You both helped make this happen, so thank you. Okay, so back to ADHD. You might already know that the acronym means Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. It affects between 5 and 7% of the global population, and women and girls are usually underdiagnosed, because women and girls are more likely to have inattentive ADHD, which doesn't manifest with the more evident classic impulsivity and hyperactivity that you can see in boys with ADHD. Bear with me for a second. Girls with inattentive ADHD, the daydreamers, enjoy being engaged with their own thoughts and stories. And girls who are hyperactive, like I think I was, don't show it the same way as boys do. Boys tend to burst out and become disruptive in class, so they are flagged and assessed earlier in life. Hyperactive girls, on the contrary, kind of get used to living with a busy, crowded, demanding brain. If you know, you know. And when they do let go of that extra energy in their brains, they express it by being, quote-unquote, too energetic, or dispersed, or overly sensitive. So, where is the deficit in ADHD? That is why the name for this neurodevelopmental disorder is being questioned among the ADHD community and scholars. It's not a matter of attention deficit, but of regulating it and redirecting it. Of putting it where you need it to go. And that's why, for any person with ADHD, it can be hard to prioritize, restrain digressions, and basically focus on what you need to do now. It's like your brain starts running when your body wants to meditate. And it freezes you when you just need to send an email or fill out a form that, for some reason, makes you anxious. That exact moment has a name, by the way. Task initiation paralysis. And that is one of the many executive functioning skills that don't come easy for people with ADHD. And that's putting it nicely. You are very much aware of what you need to do and the importance of doing it. But then, sometimes, you just can't. Not at that exact moment. And it doesn't help that to get up and do something, you also need another executive functioning skill, transitioning between actions. Sometimes, stopping a task to start another one can be the hard part, not the task itself. If you've ever driven a stick, it's like your brain is in overdrive and your body refuses to change gears. For anyone listening, transitions might even be invisible. You just go from getting out of bed to taking a shower, or from making a cup of coffee to drinking it, or from thinking that you should water your plants to, you know, getting up and watering your plants. For me, especially if I'm particularly stressed or tired, that idea can become yet another tab on my brain browser. But it's not always like that. I can also hyperfocus on something if it's really interesting, which means that 4 hours can go by before I decide to take a break, get up from my chair, and, well, reheat that coffee. Honestly, it all depends. It really depends on the day, my energy level, and if there's anything time sensitive. I'm great at getting those things done. But now that I think of it, all the examples I've mentioned and the ones that keep coming up are from my adulthood. So, what about my childhood? Where were these struggles when I was a kid? What did I have to overcome? And what did I pass with flying colors due to the positive aspects of ADHD? Turns out, the science had always been there, but no one was looking. After all, I was a good student. And the one thing that teachers brought up was that I talked too much in class. But no one stopped to think why. No one made a connection between talking too much in class and hyperactivity. No one thought that I might have felt restless when things were too slow and that my brain craved more. So I would talk or rock my chair back and forth, which is actually a classic form of stimming for kids at school. Oh, and stimming, if you don't know, is any movement or action that you do to soothe your nervous system and self-regulate when you're stressed, bored, or need sensory input. Stimming, then, is clicking your pen tirelessly when you're trying to focus on something, or twirling your hair when you're nervous. Steaming is likely why you bite your nails or doodle on your notebook, tap your foot under the table, or hum a tune. We all steam one way or another. In my case, no one thought that my persistent talking could stem from hyperactivity. I didn't make any connections either. And how could I? Turns out that in the 90s, scientists thought that boys were between 5 and 9 times more likely to have ADHD than girls. So not many specialists were looking for different manifestations in girls. Although in 1994, there were already 3 subtypes of ADHD formally recognized, hyperactive, inattentive, and a combination of both, still, the image for ADHD was, generally speaking, a restless boy. And I was not that. What the adults around me probably didn't know was that, despite all the energy and my endless imagination for making up games and stories, I kinda knew something was off. Different. Dare I say, wrong. Somewhere between grade 4 and 5, I started noticing that I struggled more than my peers with manual tasks or art class. Basically, anything that involved fine motor skills. And I didn't like how that felt. Around the same time, I also noticed that I was particularly good at other things like writing or other sports or learning languages. And excelling in some things came naturally. And that is how I discovered perfectionism. Maybe on a subconscious level, I thought that if I excelled in something, people would pay attention to that and wouldn't linger on the fact that I was struggling elsewhere. And since excelling in some areas was easy, it became a go-to resource to feel good about myself. Because seeking quote-unquote perfection, now I can see, was my way of getting a dopamine rush. And that is what ADHD brains crave. A constant influx of dopamine, which, as you may know, is a key neurotransmitter for pleasure, motivation, and, my specialty, sustained focus. Turns out that people with ADHD tend to have lower baseline dopamine levels. So seeking novelty, excitement, and high-reward activities is not a whim or a random impulse. It's our brains trying to reach a minimum dopamine standard to feel enough motivation to start a task. And as a result, an ADHD brain usually feels understimulated, so we seek out more sensory and cognitive input to function properly. And depending on the person, that can take very different forms. For example, novelty and urgency tend to work for me. And that's why I'm good at solving emergencies and being calm and focused during last-minute rushes. Because adrenaline acts as a stimulant in the brain. And, of course, I clearly didn't know all of this at age 10, but with ADHD, it is easy to feel like you're losing control of the situation, with major and minor things alike. Take basic housekeeping, for example. I would plan to do the laundry while cleaning the house, but then forget about it when a quick tidy up turned into reorganizing the entire pantry. And that, in turn, meant that the outfit that I was planning to wear the next day wouldn't be ready on time, So then I would have to think of something else to wear. That is, without getting distracted by the stack of papers I put in my closet a month ago to, quote unquote, properly organize them. Or restraining the urge to go full Marie Kondo with a basket I stashed away last week because I was having people over and I needed to pretend that my house was just casually tidy. Which never is, by the way. And I know that none of this is a major issue, but it adds up quickly. And it leaves me feeling behind in my own life. As if I'm constantly just trying to catch up with being a functional adult. And on days like this, I'm reacting, not leading my own life. For me, seeking control worked as self-regulation, even if that control was fake or sometimes useless. But that is the brain wiring behind what I call the little wins. My dopamine-seeking habit of having control over things. And that's why I get a kick out of knowing that once I'm out of my apartment, there are only 54 steps between me and the street. Or that I remembered exactly where I put my son's Chilean vaccination booklet like 3.5 years ago, so it took me seconds to find it and send it to school. You see, I need those little wins to get the illusion of control over my own life when I feel like it's drifting away from me. That hint of success at functional adulting. And soon enough, after I realized that some things are easier when I figure out the actual steps that they take, I started scaffolding, creating systems, mostly out of intuition, but sometimes with intention. That way, I'm gaining control over the situations. And do you know when I'm really good at getting things done? Probably when you're sleeping, late at night. When the world is quiet. Then my brain gets loudly productive. But the good thing is my body catches up, all hyped up by the idea of a long night waiting to be made the most of. At some point along the way, I realized that the night shift worked for me. So I turn it into my thing. The problem is that it comes at a cost. I'm going to assume here that we all know the importance of getting enough sleep and how the lack of it can affect us in the short and long terms, okay? When I was in college, I could at least offset the damage of those all-nighters by taking a nap in the afternoon or sleeping in the next day. It wasn't ideal, but it kept me going. But when I started working, that wasn't an option, obviously. I could still work late at night to meet my deadlines. But it got progressively harder to function the next day. So that was some hard rewiring I had to do. And now that I think of it, I miss those quiet nights when I got all my work done. I miss the silence. More precisely, I miss the stillness of it all. Because that's the thing. It's not just the noise. When I'm struggling to focus, everything becomes a distraction. Like the person who taps the keyboard way too hard. Or the light that won't stop flickering and that apparently doesn't bother anyone else in the room. Or even the door that opens and closes, as predictable as that can be. But now I understand that those distractions irritate me more because I have an overreactive brain. And knowing how hard it is for me to focus, if something is constantly distracting me, it it frustrates me even more. And I can either laugh it off or get irritated. However I feel at that moment, I always act the same way. I take a break and I just sit somewhere else. I don't linger because I know that my nervous system spikes when I'm irritated. And sitting elsewhere is just easier than regulating it afterwards. That irritability is one of the ways impulsivity can look like when it manifests inwardly. Because I feel it intensely, but you could barely notice it from the outside. Now I know this about me. But I didn't always. Even as a young adult, I would only work on ADHD manifestations, which means that the end goal was, not to be late or not to forget my phone or not to pay that late fee or not to miss social events because I worked best on a tight deadline, meaning the night before. But I rarely took a step back to stop and think if there was something else, a deeper reason behind those behaviors. I was thrown off by the fact that sometimes it was hard for me to keep up with myself. I mean, with my own life on a daily basis. Somehow, I managed to set high academic and professional goals for me and achieve them, and have friends and romantic relationships and overall a satisfying life. So it didn't feel like there was something that I needed to get checked or something to work on. Something that wasn't supposed to be that way. I really didn't know. Life just felt draining, sure, but I figured it was equally draining for everyone. And turns out it's not. And to this day, I still fight the urge to deliver excellence, although I realize that it's more restricting than liberating. And now I know that structuring everything from step 1 to 20 can make me more anxious instead of more productive. I've learned that, in my experience, being a perfectionist is a coping mechanism, a really tiring strategy. And it has taken me years to realize that my core need to function as an adult is not being quote-unquote perfect or being in control. That's just me masking. My core need is having to restrict and redirect my energy and attention. And once you unlock that core need of yours, many things start making sense. And you realize that you don't really need a coping mechanism. You just need self-understanding. I learned, for example, that executive function skills are weaker in neurodivergent brains, including those with ADHD. Understanding this allows me to work on it and to become increasingly aware of my specific challenges. That way, I can work on them to finally do things perfectly. No, I'm just joking. I would actually prefer to be less anxious rather than perfect. But with self-understanding, I've realized that maybe my brain is just mildly clogged with anxiety most of the time, and I should accept that and develop tools to work on it. So yes, my body moves slower than my brain does, and sometimes it takes time to catch up. But that's what I realized this past year. It doesn't need to. Not necessarily, not all the time. One can carry the other to the end line, as long as the team gets there. Maybe that's why I liked track and field so much as a child. In a relay race, not everyone crosses the finishing line. But everyone does their best where they are, sometimes my body might take a bit longer to do its part, or my brain will freeze and I will need some cheering up, like a dopamine burst. But I always finish the race. Sometimes, they barely get things done. And others, people may not even understand what they just witnessed. For example, I was that classmate who hadn't even started reading the book the day before the test and got the best grade. And today, I am the mom who can play for hours with her son in three languages, which is as repetitive and creatively demanding as it sounds. The same mom who, out of nowhere, asked her son at a park if he wanted to take a random bus to see where it took them, and now goes on quote-unquote bus adventures every other week. That day I clearly didn't know what I was getting myself into, but I love them. And sometimes not even I can fully grasp what I accomplished. How deeply creative I am. My last-minute resourcefulness. My calmness under pressure. Or my adaptability. People still might wonder how I pulled it off. And other times, they won't be able to understand why I can't just get things done. But if they hang on, understand how my brain works, and give me space to build up to it, they will see that I just won't hang up the phone until I get the Mac store to repair my laptop for free, which I did, or that I can fill out and send that tax return form in time. And then I'll just move on to greater, more creative things. Honestly, all I need, and what every neurodivergent person benefits from, is understanding. And maybe a reminder or two about our reheated coffee in the microwave. I might actually go and check mine right now, just in case.
Take a time. No need to hurry. Take it easy. No need to hurry. If you fall from the race, it's no disgrace. Just pick yourself from off the ground.